Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dotson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on Indiana State Prison Warden Ron Neal implementing many protocols to protect the well-being of staff as well as offenders at the state prison. Governor Eric Holcomb wants the Indiana Supreme Court to clarify what Attorney General Curtis Hill's law license suspension means for his future. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Paul Schreiner, the Executive Director of Project Neighbors. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Governor Eric Holcomb wants the Indiana Supreme Court to clarify what Attorney General Curtis Hill's law license suspension means for his future. On Monday, the Supreme Court suspended Hill's license for 30 days after it concluded he criminally battered four women in 2018. The qualifications for Attorney General are only that a person must reside in the state and be, quote, duly licensed to practice law in Indiana. Holcomb wants the court to tell him whether Hill's 30-day suspension means he's not eligible to serve as Attorney General. If so, state law empowers the governor to appoint a replacement. Holcomb has long called for Hill to step down over the sexual misconduct incident. Hill previously said his chief deputy will lead the AG's office until his license is reinstated next month.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A bill that would provide workplace accommodations for expectant mothers will not be part of lawmakers' summer study session. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports many policy groups across the state are disappointed with the legislature.
The bill would have provided reasonable accommodations for pregnant workers, like rest breaks, options to sit, or a water bottle. It died earlier this year after being gutted to instead assign it to an interim study committee. Opponents of the bill say federal disability laws already provide some of these measures. Rima Shahid is the executive director of Women for Change Indiana. She says she's shocked the issue won't be studied, especially as many women work on the front lines in the pandemic.
Women are on the front lines as healthcare workers and are essential workers. We're telling Hoosier women that we're not going to take necessary steps to understand what we need to protect Hoosier women and to make sure that we have an equal playing field for everybody.
Advocates say they'll continue to fight for the bill in the next legislative session. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
At the Indiana State Prison, Warden Ron Neal has implemented many protocols to protect the well-being of the offenders housed at Indiana State Prison and staff assigned to the facility. Upon arrival at the facility, there are signs reminding staff, quote, if sick, stay home. All staff must abide by the following. They must wear a face mask, practice social distancing, pass a symptom screening questionnaire, as well as pass a temperature check. Warden Neal says communication is the key to slowing the spread of COVID-19. Knowing this, additional signage has been put up in numerous locations to remind offenders and staff of the COVID-19 protocols. But it's not just the staff who are assisting in slowing the spread. The offenders are helping too. For instance, they have been making masks for the staff as well as other offenders. In the few short weeks since they started production, the offender seamstresses have made over 4,000 masks for the facility. And as needed, the Indiana State Prison utilizes the technical response team to assist in deep cleaning and decontamination. ISP's healthcare heroes have been hard at work also. Daily, temperature and symptom screenings are conducted on quarantine housing units as well as on all offenders who are over 65 years of age. Any offender who is showing symptoms of the virus is seen by medical staff and evaluated accordingly. Any offender who has tested positive for the virus is isolated by themselves.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The COVID-19 pandemic has dramatically changed what teaching looks like. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay reports the state's largest teachers union says it's also made the need for increased compensation even more critical.
Teacher compensation was shaping up to be a hot-ticket policy item for lawmakers in 2021, especially after thousands of educators flooded the State House 6 months ago to highlight teachers' and public schools' financial needs. Then COVID-19 hit, and Indiana State Teachers Association President Keith Gamble says addressing teacher compensation statewide remains critical, especially if the pandemic prompts more teachers to retire.
And we have to be very careful because if that were to go up too quickly, we don't have enough folks in the pipeline to fill in.
Gamble says the union will continue to question political candidates on their views about public education ahead of the primary and general elections, virtually for now. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana continues to see a decline in the percentage of high school graduates going to college. According to the Commission for Higher Education's annual college readiness report, only 61% of Hoosier high school graduates enrolled in college in 2018. That's compared to 65% in 2015. The report goes on to say the percentage of students who need remediation continues to drop as well. Only 9% of incoming college freshmen needed remedial coursework in 2018, compared to 12% the year before.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Indiana Republican Party's 2020 state convention will be virtual. The party officially announced the change Tuesday in compliance with COVID-19 guidelines. The state's Back on Track plan will likely restrict gatherings to no more than 250 people by June 19th, when the state GOP convention is scheduled. And since the event typically attracts more than 1,000 delegates, party chair Kyle Hupfer says it's a no-go. Instead, Indianapolis TV station Wish will broadcast and live stream the convention on June 18th. It will feature addresses from Governor Eric Holcomb and Lieutenant Governor Suzanne Crouch. It will also include speeches from each of the Republican candidates seeking the Attorney General nomination. Voting in the race will then take place by mail. Normally, candidates chosen at the convention square off in multiple rounds until one person earns a majority of votes cast. This year's system will allow delegates to rank the candidates by order of preference to determine a winner. Those ballots will be due by July 9th.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box says information gathered by the State Contact Tracing Call Center remains private. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports the center, which launched Monday, talks with COVID-19 positive Hoosiers to find out where they've been and with whom they've been in contact.
The call center has already contacted hundreds of people to trace the spread of COVID-19, and Dr. Chris Box emphasizes that private information will never be shared in those tracing calls.
We do not call an individual and say, hey, you were exposed to Mike Smith on Saturday at the wedding, and we think you could have, COVID-19.
Box also notes cooperating with contact tracing is not mandatory. She says she can't force people to tell her where they've been.
Fortunately, we've not really run into that problem because Hoosiers all across our state want to protect the people that they care about, the people that they love. They don't want to infect someone else.
The state recommends self-isolation for 14 days when a person has been in contact with someone who's tested positive for COVID-19. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
utility companies will soon be allowed to resume disconnections for unpaid bills. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel reports, the state's consumer advocate group is asking the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission for people unemployed due to the COVID-19 crisis.
Among other things, the group wants the IURC to order utilities to continue suspending disconnections past June 4th, the date the governor's moratorium on disconnections lifts. Anthony Swinger is with the Office of the Utility Consumer Counselor.
And also require utilities to waive deposits, reconnection fees, and late fees as another step to help protect consumers during this difficult time.
Though these orders would only apply to regulated utilities, Swinger hopes rural unregulated utilities will do the same to protect their customers. The OUCC also wants the commission to look into how utilities can best recover money lost due to things like unpaid bills. Swinger says it's important that the IURC also account for any money utilities save due to the crisis, such as from putting big projects on hold. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Paul Schreiner, the executive director of Project Neighbors.
This is regionally speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. There's an organization that is called Neighbors Corp, better known as Project Neighbors, in Valparaiso and in Porter County, that is helping folks these days. They've been helping folks actually for quite some time, but it goes back even further. And we'll find out more about the organization. Let's talk with Paul Schreiner. He is the executive director of Neighbors Corporation, or Corp, which is better known as Project Neighbors in Porter County. And we'll find out more about the group itself and how it's dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic. Paul, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Happy to talk to you, Chris.
Well, tell us first a little history for people that may or may not be familiar with the Neighbors Corp process and Project Neighbors in particular. How did you all get that started, and what were the goals originally before we've come up to this very historic time in our lives?
Well, Project Neighbors was never a planned organization. It happened because an individual responded to another individual 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Walt Reiner, who had been a football coach at Valparaiso University, was teaching an urban studies class in Chicago, working with a Lutheran church there. And the church secretary was a young black woman, single mom with five kids. And as Walt was ending his tenure there, about to move back to Valpo, he had moved to Chicago with his family, she came to him and said, "I sure wish my kids could grow up in a nice little town like Valparaiso where they would be safe and not be victim to drugs and violence and gangs." She lived in Cabrini Green, which, if the listeners don't know, was a high-rise apartment complex, notorious. And Walt said to her, "You would be crazy to move to Valparaiso," which at the time in 1968 was an all-white community. This woman was black. Apparently she was adequately crazy because she did move to Valpo, and Walt marshaled his friends and personal resources and built her a house. Her name was Barbara Cotton, and she and her children were the first African-American family to live in Valparaiso. So the organization got started by one individual responding to the need of another individual, and we've pretty much followed that pattern for 50 years.
What types of goals have you, as you've been finding more about the organization, have seen Project Neighbors go through? What types of areas of family life as well as individual life has the organization been able to help over the years?
What we found was that there were a lot of people who wanted to live in Valparaiso and a lot of people living in Valparaiso already who were in somewhat desperate straits. And the primary obstacle was the cost of housing. So for 50 years, we've either purchased and renovated or built new over 100 housing units. And with housing, particularly for single moms, becomes a challenge to find employment if you got little kids. So about 30 years ago, we invested and purchased a building that the university sold and turned it into a sliding scale daycare center. It's known as Hilltop Neighborhood House.
Mm-hmm.
In the corner of that was a 500 square foot room, which we called the Hilltop Community Health Center. And we had one volunteer nurse practitioner and one night a week volunteer doctor who would see the uninsured. Needless to say, they were overwhelmed within months with the demand for their services. And when we bought the daycare center, there was an adjacent lot next to it. So we built an 11,000 square foot Hilltop Community Health Center, which has since turned into something called HealthLink.
Yeah.
It's now one of the largest community providing health centers in the state of Indiana. So Project Neighbors has tried to identify specific needs, and as those needs materialize and are met, other needs become apparent, and we try to respond to that.
I noticed that HealthLink, I guess it got so big, I guess, in a way that it had to move, and that kind of opened the way for more projects, and in particular, the latest one, I guess, that you guys are taking care of.
Well, when HealthLink moved out of the 11,000 square feet, we had built it, and the director of HealthLink feared waking up to the ghost of Walt Reiner, so she sold it back to us for the balance of the mortgage. It was a $1 million building that we bought for a little over $300,000. We gutted all the medical facilities and put 18 living units, very small efficiency apartments, for women at risk of homelessness. I have an office there, so I'm in there every day, and I see these women when they come downstairs to do their laundry, and they're thriving there. Very, very affordable. It's not a shelter. It is a very affordable rental unit with about 200 to 300 square feet per residence. But each unit has a kitchen and a bathroom, and they're just little tiny homes.
I know that it's not a surprise to anyone who has been around the city of Valparaiso for any length of time to quickly realize that affordable housing is probably one of the biggest issues that anybody in the community faces. And if it happens to be that's what you're looking for, you certainly that's right top of your list. But also, too, even if you have a family, if you have other housing that you're living in, you hear about it from your neighbors, and it's a community project that's been going on for years. What has come about within this project, with the help of organizations, charitable organizations, nonprofit organizations in Valparaiso and Porter County, to help make this particular project, the housing project, work the best?
Well, we always ally ourselves with some other group, either a church or some kind of organization that has a desire to participate in community efforts. It's a Habitat for Humanity style building project.
Mm-hmm.
Where we have somebody who knows what they're doing leading 10 or 12 people who don't know what they're doing. And by doing that, we end up being able to build for about 60% of market value, which, of course, then allows for rent or resale costs to be very, very low. And, of course, that's the goal. When affordable is your goal, you have to do something besides play the market game. So we've worked with half a dozen different churches in the community. We've worked with Valparaiso University students over the years. Consistently, they have been a great source of volunteer labor and an enthusiastic source. Individuals who hear about us will show up. We'll sign them up to our email list, and whenever we have a project, we'll send out a blast, and people show up. So it's been a system that has, without a great deal of money or a great deal of organization, has worked over and over and over, I think, because people have a hunger to make a contribution.
We're talking with Paul Schreiner, who is the executive director of Neighbors Corporation, Neighbors Corp, about Project Neighbors, and in particular here about what is called Neighbors Place, which is a residence for women. Now, let's fast forward to today, to 2020, and with the coronavirus pandemic that we are all facing, it's probably been especially tough for the ladies and some of the family members that are staying in Neighbors Place these days. How are they dealing with the crisis and trying to be able to recoup from everything?
Well, interestingly, sometimes the people at the bottom of the economic scale have become accustomed to their lifestyle, and many of the residents of Neighbors Place are on Social Security disability, earning $8,000 to $10,000 a year, which is adequate to live there and to provide themselves with food. Some of our other residents who live in single-family houses, what we did when this whole crisis struck was we marshaled our forces, our board of directors, and we contacted all the people who live in Project Neighbors houses or apartments. And we just asked them, how's it going? What's your situation? Are you still working? And we assured everybody that nobody would be evicted because of this, that we would work with everybody in terms of their being able to pay the rent or make their payments. And that, in fact, I wrote a letter to about 400 of our longtime supporters and raised a considerable, called an emergency fund, which we will use to subsidize people who are unable to provide their rent or other needs during this period.
That's wonderful news to hear. With all the help that you've gotten and the support not only from residents in Valparaiso and elsewhere in the region, but also from the organizations like United Way and the like that are helping out, what kind of responses are you getting back from the residents? Obviously, like you say, they've become accustomed to where they are. They want to stay where they are. And hopefully their lives are starting to very slowly come back to normal. What are they telling you all about all the efforts that a lot of other people and organizations in Valparaiso have been doing to help them?
You know, they're appreciative. These are typically employed people who are struggling to do the best they can to raise their children and to provide for themselves. And I suspect the anxiety level went up when this whole crisis hit.
No.
And when we called, initially, we called, I suppose, 4 or 5 weeks ago, and everybody said they were doing fine at that point, but they sure appreciated hearing from us. And we called again a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, and we found that things had deteriorated a bit. But again, the appreciation level was very high.
Okay. Now, Paul, let's go look ahead past the pandemic and hope the end comes soon. What kind of plans does Neighbors Corporation have and helping Neighbors Place and the other organizations that you have under your umbrella, so to speak, out, or even expansion? What's ahead for the future?
Well, organizations like Hilltop Neighborhood House, the Daycare Center, and HealthLink are independent organizations. They're functioning on their own.
Yeah.
We have allied ourselves with an organization called Respite House. Respite House runs a 16-bed halfway house for recovering substance abusers. And a year or two ago, Mitch Peters and I bumped into each other, and I had just bought a couple of lots for Project Neighbors. And he said, boy, I sure would like those because we need more halfway house facility in this town. So we are, as we speak, building a 22-bed halfway house on two lots that Project Neighbors provided. We are not going to be the owner of it, nor will we have any program responsibilities, but we are the general contractor because we know how to do that. In addition, we have going in front of the BZA in Valpo, the Board of Zoning Appeals, in June, two projects, one a 5-unit three-bedroom apartment building close to downtown, because we believe that the people that work downtown, the low-wage workers that are in retail or they're serving food, need a place to live that's convenient. And finally, after we actually built 33 units for single women in Valparaiso, Neighbors Place and a building called Caroline's Place, which we built in conjunction with Housing Opportunities. We finally are going to try to build a facility for men in a similar situation. And again, I repeat, this is not a shelter. It's just an apartment house, which is built with community effort. Therefore, the cost is very, very low.
Paul Schreiner is Executive Director of Neighbors Corp. We're talking here about Project Neighbors, and in particular about Neighbors Place, the way that that the organization has been helping people in Northwest Indiana get resettled in some cases in the community of Valparaiso. And Paul, thank you very much for the update. The best of luck to everybody with the organization and the people that live at Neighbors Place. We can all dig our ways out of this COVID-19 situation that we're in right now. And thank you for being with us to talk about it.
Thanks a lot.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.